Views expressed on this program are those of the host, guests, and callers, and do not necessarily reflect the views of the station, its management, or advertisers. You're listening to Transformation Talk Radio.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with me, Dr. Mary Angela McGuire, on Transformation Talk Radio. During this show, I'll help you practice mindfulness. Most of the principles of mindfulness are very simple, but putting those principles into practice can be devilishly difficult. I'm here to help you become a student of your own mind. I'll share ideas, insights, and tools you can use to release yourself from fearful and negative thinking and live from a place of clarity and confidence. Please join me as we challenge ourselves to change. Nothing But Now starts now. Hi, everyone. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Thank you so much for joining me today. I hope you can take this next hour and relax. Reflect on your experience, maybe as I talk about some common challenges we face on the mindfulness journey, and think about the habits of mind that you've developed over the course of your life, examining those habits and asking yourself how well they serve you now. Mindfulness, as I like to say, bringing attention and awareness to the present moment without judgment, is a simple goal that can be difficult to achieve. But its value is the opportunity to have greater inner peace. And when we can have greater inner peace, we are more peaceful and exude more peace and bring more peace into our everyday lives, into our interactions with others, strangers, as well as loved ones. And regardless of what's happening in your life right now, I think given the state of the world, there's value in this aspiration for all of us to have greater inner peace so that we can share and bring greater peace into the world around us. So we are in week two, or I am in week two of my visions, adventures in vision. So a week ago Monday, I had cataract surgery on my right eye, and this Monday I had cataract surgery on my left eye. So I went from super nearsighted with cataracts in both eyes and astigmatisms in both eyes to a week where I had terrific distance vision and my same old kind of deeply impaired vision in my left eye. And the great thing about that was that I could see every day throughout the day, I could compare what had it been like with poor vision in both eyes versus what was it going to be like with very good vision in my right, in both eyes. And then on Monday, I had the surgery, and you know, the first day or so, you don't have a really strong sense, I didn't anyway, of what this was really going to be like. But now by today, it's not entirely settled, but it's really pretty close to settled. And I've had those follow-up appointments where they say, holy cow, you can see. Holy cow, I can see. And mostly what I have because of the choices I made. So I got a lens that, so the cataracts got eliminated, of course, but I got a lens that was able to compensate for the astigmatism. So that's gone in both eyes. And then I chose a single focal lens, which is a choice that I made mostly because I'm a slow adopter on technology, and the multifocal lenses are a little bit more recent technology, and I'm a slow adopter, so I'm a single focus. So I had to make a choice, and the choice I made was for distance vision, which I've not had probably since I was 8 years old. And it's been very, very interesting to be able to see out my front window and realize that I can see down the hill and that there's a structure I walk by every day that I've seen it up close when I walk by it, but I've never seen it from my house, and now I can see it. On a clear day, we're so fortunate we can see Mount Rainier. And I've always seen the beautiful, majestic mountain, and it's white on top, right? As far as I knew. Now I can see the tree lines. And coming down the side of the mountain, I can see definition. I can see, get some sense of the topography of the mountaintop that I have literally never noticed before or been close enough to really see. But I did make a sacrifice, and the sacrifice was close vision. So my entire life, even since I was 10 years old and wore glasses and was very nearsighted, I could always count on the fact that if I brought something close enough to my eyes, I could see it. If it was something that could be brought close to my eyes, a person's face, but mostly reading, right? That I was never going to be at risk of not being able to read because I could always bring something close enough to my eyes to see it. And that is no longer true. The closer I bring it, the less able I am to see it. And I won't be able to get prescription reading glasses for a couple of weeks until, you know, everything's kind of really calmed down with my eyes. So, you know, I got the 3-pack from Costco. I keep a set next to my bed. I keep a set here in my office, and I keep a set, I call it the floaters, and I just walk around with those all day. It's a little scary. It's really a change. And it's a new set of habits to get to establish about, you know, sort of having glasses, when I use them, when I don't need them, all of those things. And to have new vision is, and to have lost, in a sense, old vision is really a transformation for me. I don't think I'm going to get over it for a long time, and I'm going to be really aware of it, and I'm going to torture you with it as a metaphor for the mindfulness journey, probably for weeks to come. So, and today's choice around that is about my experience in mindfulness journey and our relationships with others. You know, what I noticed as a coach in my life coaching practice, and this show is really an extension of that practice, is that people usually come to me and say that they feeling stuck at work, sort of maybe trapped in a job they don't love, or unsure of how to be more, frankly, liberated or happy or successful in the sense of feeling good about the way that they work, the way they interact with other people, and who they are in the world as a professional. So it's not just about sort of being giving up and saying, okay, corporate America, do what you will with me, but really a genuine sense of liberation in their work. And sometimes that means making a lot of changes. But usually, over time, what people eventually start to talk about are the same kinds of challenges, habits of mind that they notice getting in their way and causing suffering at work are also the source of suffering at home and in their private life, in their personal relationships, in family relationships. And so that's what we end up talking about is both things. So what I've noticed in the way that this my vision experience has been a metaphor for me on this mindfulness journey is that, like my distance vision, mindfulness has offered me a lot more clarity. I see a lot more, I think, than I used to see. But one thing I've also noticed is that my vision is clearing, but when it comes to others, particularly those closest to me, it's still a challenge. I still, I think, miss a lot. And that's what we're going to talk about today. We're on a mindfulness journey. The people in our lives may or may not be. What are we still missing? What are the challenges that close relationships in particular really have for us as we continue on this journey? And how do we do that with grace and compassion for ourselves and others? As usual, our topic today is a tall order, and so it helps to start by breathing. So let's do that. Let's do the starting with hands to heart center. So we bring our hands to our heart center on an inhale. We intertwine our fingers and push our palms outward on an exhale. We bring our hands over our head on an inhale, and then we release our hands on an exhale. So if you'll join me, hands to heart center. Third time. Thanks for joining me with that. Now, we try to bring attention to our breath because it helps us to calm down. It brings us clarity, and it helps us focus our attention. So lots of things about vision in those three statements aren't there. And I always like to say when we talk about this in relationship to vision, of course we are talking about insight, inner vision, thinking about ourselves in relationship to others, making sense of the world around us, coming to a greater sense of understanding of the people in our lives and our role in their lives. So that's what we're going to be talking about today. But let's go ahead and take our first break. And when we come back, if you would, during the break, though, think about at work, with family, at home, and so extended family and maybe immediate family or whoever you think of as being closest to you in your life. What are some places where you think you are still, your vision is still impaired, where it's still hard to see clearly what's happening in those relationships? And particularly, are there places as you've been on a mindfulness journey where you've wondered, how do I maybe get the other person on this journey as well? And isn't that what I should be doing? Shouldn't we all be mindfulness evangelists? Of course, the answer is no. But we'll talk about that a little bit more after the break. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. See you right away.
Tune in to the show Heart Change Consciousness with me, Dr. Trish DeRocher, as stories of inspired activism come to life. Listening to conversations with your favorite authors, change makers, and many more who practice inspired spiritual activism and transform vulnerabilities into sources of strength. Let's be inspired together through my show, Heart Change Consciousness, on TransformationTalkRadio.com.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to TransformationTalkRadio.com or visit Susan's website at SusanDolce.com.
Hi, I'm Laura Goldstein, and here's a Coffee with the Universe tip. It's no secret that anxiety and overwhelm are on the rise. While the tendency is to suppress these feelings, anxiety is really a messenger that's telling you something is off, very off. You might be shooting yourself and living a life based on someone else's expectations. Maybe you have trouble saying no, or maybe you're following the fearful voice in your head that demands you do more, be more in order to feel worthy. So see where you can make a few adjustments in what you're doing to get rid of the overwhelm and create more peace inside instead. To get more tips like this, tune into my Transformation Talk radio show called Coffee with the Universe. It's a live call-in show. I'd love to chat with you.
Are you tired of being tired? Hi, I'm Mary Jane Mack. Did you know the adrenal glands, the workhorse of the body? They are the means by which you position yourself in life for whatever comes your way. Tiny but mighty, producing hormones the body uses to promote energy and vitality. These adrenals determine how you respond to stress, and when depleted, the body loses its ability to function powerfully when we need it most. The much-needed adrenaline or epinephrine is not available for emergency situations. Cortisone and cortisol, the longer-acting anti-stress adrenal hormones, can also become depleted due to the pace of our everyday lives. We overwork and undernutrition our most powerful ally that helps us to live the lives we desire. We are able to determine the optimum function of the adrenals and put your system back in balance. Contact us today to feel powerfully energized at 888-777-4232 or visit us at MaryJaneMack.com.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and I'm your host for this hour on our mindfulness journey. So I've been talking for the last couple of weeks about my experience of having a radical improvement in my vision, but also having less up close vision than I used to, and having to make a difficult choice about that, about what I can see and how well I can see it and what help I need in order to see. And like in that same sense, mindfulness has been a vision kind of journey for me of what can I see, how well can I see it, what help do I need in order to see clearly in my life and in my relationships with other people. So we're talking today specifically about being on a mindfulness journey and still having to deal with other people and the challenges that that can present. And I think there are maybe three different ways that I think about this that I think might be helpful to you, and that as I'm talking about this, I hope you're thinking about the relationships in your life and how they are shaped by and by your being on a mindfulness journey, what you're noticing in terms of your habits of mind and relationship to other people. So one of the things that I think we can note that our mindfulness journey helps us notice is the stories we tell ourselves about the world around us, about our lives, about our relationships with others. And so one of those first places to really begin to think about this in relationship to others is what do we tell ourselves other people's perception of us is? That's an awkward sentence, isn't it? So we go out into the world to work, for instance, and we have a sense of can we bring to conscious awareness the knowledge that in our interactions with other people, we often have a sense of how they see us. We're maybe initially and on the surface aware of how we see other people in our lives, with close or at work, and out in the world in general. But can we bring to awareness the stories we tell ourselves about how they see us? That is a story that's really important to come to terms with, to come to notice, because it has such an impact on and it shapes the way that we interact with other people. And one of the ways that starts to go off the rails, I think, and this is the perception question, is that we tend to then, because we see the other person, we think we know how they see us, and the stories begin in terms of then us sort of reading the other person's mind or imagining that we know what they think and feel, that we really get trapped sometimes in those perceptions. So if we have a conflict with someone at work, we might immediately start to tell ourselves, well, they're doing this because. And they're doing this because in relationship to me. They don't see me as competent, and therefore that's why they're bossing me around. And they have kind of a God complex in there, right? And when we think about how quickly in the face of a conflict, we start to really describe and fully examine and fully populate this rather large dramatic story about how they see us and what's wrong with them and what's going on with them and what their motivations are, what they're thinking and feeling, why they're doing what they're doing. So that's the first thing to be really thinking about, is that notion of the stories we tell ourselves about other people and how they see us, and how they think and feel. And you know, a quick antidote to that is to say, when we notice those stories, especially if they are in the place of they must think this, they must feel this, this must be their motivation, is how can we bring ourselves back from that and get out of the other person's mind, right? We're in their business. We're trying to step into their shoes, not in an empathetic way, but in a way to keep our story going. So noticing that story and being able to bring ourselves a little bit back to say, I don't actually know what they think and feel until they tell me. This is, of course, related to perspective, and I think one of the places where we can become most aware of what's called the perspectival appearance of reality, right, that we all see reality from the exact place where we're standing, is in our family situations. Whether you're from a large family, as I am, or a small family, it's you and a parent, or two parents, or maybe just a couple of siblings, in my case, six siblings and a very present mother and a very absent father, we can really start to notice that our perspective on reality is very much shaped by where we're standing. And that can be a cause of conflict, but it can also be a cause of insight and an opportunity for insight. And I've really noticed this in my own family, and I have two stories to tell you about that. So one is, several years ago, I was out to lunch when my mother, at this point, she was probably in her late 70s, and we were out to lunch with some friends of mine who loved her dearly and loved to joke around with her. And my mother, it was a very kind, lovely person, but she was very fierce as well, and she didn't necessarily hold back from showing that fierceness. And my friend Jim said to her, I'll bet your kids were, you know, really well behaved and, you know, a little bit afraid of you when they were growing up. And my mother laughed. She had four sons and a daughter my older sister that she thought of as being very strong-willed people. And she said, no, my kids were never afraid of me. And then she looked at me and said, right. Well, I was the youngest, I was several years younger than my siblings. I was terribly afraid of my mother when I was a kid. I was really afraid of her. And I didn't like her very much as a result of that when I was a little kid, because I resented to being so fearful all the time of her anger, her frustration, her seemed to me unbridled willingness to show those qualities off whenever the moment struck her. It was many years before I saw her fear. But as in that moment, that I'm a grown woman now, right? In this conversation, I don't live with her. I'm no longer afraid of her. Quite the opposite. But she could tell immediately from my face that I did not feel the same way. And it was for me, even before I was on a particularly committed mindfulness journey, a real moment of liberation to not rush in and say, "Oh no, no, I wasn't afraid of you." Even though I could see that her discomfort in that moment, I was not willing to sacrifice my perspective. I was neither needing to really lay it out for her in excruciating detail about how afraid I had been of her as a young child, but I also didn't deny it. And it was a great moment of perspective. She was a parent of this unruly group. She did not see our fear, and I didn't know that. I'd never had occurred to me that she didn't see that I was afraid, just as it had never occurred to her that I was afraid. And several weeks later, because it did prey on her mind a little bit, she did talk to me about it a little bit and apologized. And, you know, I was no longer angry. I'd had some really good therapists. So it was no longer something we really needed to hash out, fortunately for me. But it was a great opportunity to not sacrifice my story. But that is often what happens in close relationships, is that we do sacrifice our interpretation for somebody else's comfort. But a great example to me of perspective. And I've seen the same thing happen with my brothers. Again, a place, you know, with siblings, there can be so much conflict. And what I have come to notice is so much of that having to do with perspective. So one of the questions, if you asked each of my siblings, were our parents happily married? If you asked me that question 10 years ago, if I asked your brothers and sister, were your parents happily married? I would have said, no, of course they weren't. They would all say no. I wouldn't even cross my mind that they would say anything else. But I have a brother that I've had this conversation with. And shockingly to me, his perception, his memory, especially as a young child, is that our parents were happily married. And I think it made him sad when he realized that because of the age difference, not huge, but it's just enough, that I really have no memory of their happy years together. I would have said I didn't even know they had them, because I think pictures lie. So, right, I didn't really, and I've heard my mother's stories about the early years of their marriage. So to me, I've only ever heard the negative, and I was really startled. But think about how much that shift in perspective, that difference in perspective, could be the cause of our mutual suffering, defensiveness, frustration with each other, because we had, not because the facts were different, but because our perspective was different. And we were, and if you think about it in terms of family relationships and systems, you know, we often are trying to defend our view of reality. And so the point to me is not that my view of reality is right and my brother's is wrong. It's, but that can I acknowledge, can I live with the fact that he had a different experience and he's come to interpret it differently? Does that have to threaten my understanding of reality, my perspective? I think through mindfulness, I have come to be more at ease with and more comfortable with the idea that that perspective can be so different from mine. Another place where I think we really get into struggles is when we have not just conflicts with someone, but judgments that are wrapped around concerns for another person. And I hear this a lot in my work with clients, of people wanting to help others. And especially I think when we, you know, become something new in our lives that's really helping us, like mindfulness or mindfulness meditation or other kinds of practices, we want everyone to be happy. But what can happen is that we come to a place where what we're really saying to another person is, I'm judging you because I care about you, right? And I want you to be happy. So someone, you know, a sibling or a close friend who always is coming to us with their problems, and you think to yourself, maybe you don't say it out loud, so much bad judgment here, so much unhappiness. If only, right? If only she would do it this way. If only he wouldn't make those choices, right? And it's hard to recognize in that moment that it's those if only statements are really judgments. right? That they are coming to that person not with graciousness and compassion, which we may feel but have a hard time putting into practice, because what's standing between us and those comments and that graciousness or compassion is the judgment that the other person is making bad choices. And that's one of those places where we can really start to notice your journey is different from mine. We are not on the same journey, no matter how close we may be. And where we're going next, is how is it that we can be so close to another person but not be on the same journey? And what do we do with that? And we're going to talk from the perspective of my friend Craig, who said to me one time, "We are not our partners." I know, I knew that, right? I mean, technically, separate body, all that. But in my heart, I don't think I did know it until he said that to me so clearly. We are not our partners. And what does it mean if we're not our partners and we're not on the same journey? Can a relationship sustain despite that, be sustained despite that? So let's take our break. And when we come back, take this conversation about how we're seeing things, how we're sometimes blinded by our closeness to other people, and what mindfulness can help us see more clearly in the closest of relationships that we have. So you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. We'll be right back after the break.
Are you ready to branch out? Take a leap of faith. Tune in to Get Rooted Radio with Erica Gifford Mills on TransformationTalkRadio.com to equip, empower, and enlighten yourself. Erica will energize and excite you to power up your passionate dream that sets your soul on fire. So, get fearlessly ready and get powerfully rooted in your yes to live it up, love it up, and let it go. Visit GetRootedRadio.com.
Are you ready for a holistic healing revolution? Subscribe to Burn Bright Today podcast with Jennifer Marcinelli on Transformation Talk Radio. Healing is about self-care and seeking help when you need it. The best investment you can make is in yourself and your body, mind, and spirit. One step at a time, you can burn bright and live a life you dream. For more information on how to heal from home, visit burnbrighttoday.com.
What we've been taught and told is not all there is. Life is all about energy, and the energy you feel is real. Tune into the energy paradigm each month on TransformationTalkRadio.com with Dr. Vic. The energy paradigm is an eye-opening, mind-shifting, transformative, and earth-shattering way to live, work, and do business that will enable you to unlock your magic every day. Visit TheEnergyParadigm.com.
Stuck in a roundabout of dysfunction? Learn how to speak your truth to power with host Dr. Kathy Aubert. Create real change with smart tools and smart strategies. No frills, no fluff, just life-changing conversations to help get you where you want to be. Extend your reach and become an agent for real change with Kathy Aubert. For more information on Kathy and her work, please visit drkathyaubert.com. That's drkathyaubert.com.
Heaven on Earth, your online school of divinity, building your inner coach as you lay down your foundation in the new earth with you as the authority. Take action now. The number one challenge people face every day is the negative voice in their head. We work each day to turn negatives into positives. It's all a matter of perception. Our challenge at this time is to remain intensely positive and focused, creating the world we wish to live in. Wake up on purpose with Cornelia's daily online positive messages guiding us in the new paradigm. Raise yourself into happiness and inner peace daily. Elevate your personal frequency, free from negativity, and reprogram yourself step by step, shifting your energy patterns with positive repetition, daily building your new earth with someone you trust. All the heavy lifting has been done for you. Wake up happy with CorneliaStephanieVIP.com. Try free for 7 days now.
Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. So today we're talking about my adventures in vision, and in particular, one of the things I've noticed this week after post cataract surgery is that because I don't have the regular reading glasses yet, the prescription ones, I'm constantly trying to figure out what I can and cannot see with the naked eye and with the readers. And the computer screen is actually one of the most interesting challenges. Before cataract surgery, couldn't have seen anything without my glasses. Now it's slightly better here, but then there's the whole going back and forth, right? Seeing and yes, that's exactly what's happening on our mindfulness journey, isn't it? That where things come into focus and there's clarity, but they also drift away and we lose track and it's hard to see what's happening. And what gets in the way, of course, are those habits of mind that we've been developing since a very early age that shape how we interact in the world, how we see other people, how we see them seeing us. And we've been talking about the stories we tend to tell ourselves about our relationships to other people, our perspective and how radically individual our perspective is, and that when we lose sight of that, it can be difficult to accept with compassion and grace that another person sees what seem to be the same facts from a very different perspective and with a different interpretation that they bring to it. And finally, that our habit of judgment can get in the way of our desires to be most helpful and loving toward another person, if it's shadowed by judgments about how that person lives his or her life, that can be a huge barrier, typically is a huge barrier, to really being of value and help to them. Which, you know, in a mindfulness journey, that is a kind of ultimate goal, is to be of service, to be of help to others, and that the heart of that is really kindness, loving kindness, and non-judging awareness. But these habits, these stories, these perspectives, this habit of judgment can really make it difficult to do that. And we've been talking a little bit more specifically now about our closest relationships, whether it's, what do I call mine? My life partner, my person, right? A husband, a wife, whom that closest romantic, loving relationship. But these can also be places with, I think, close relatives, parents if we're particularly close, or siblings, friends, where we are on a mindfulness journey, we may feel as if we are coming to a greater understanding of ourselves and the world, and we might really want that close person in our life to come along on that journey with us. I have a client who was talking to me about that in our recent conversations, because she would really like and is often after our conversations, we talk about something she might want to read, etc., so eager to share that with her partner, wanting so much for him to see some of the things that she is seeing in her life. It's the challenge, of course, is that as my friend Craig said, she is not her partner any more than I am mine, or my closest friend or a parent. But it creates an apprehension for her. What if she continues to change and evolve? Will she leave her partner behind, right? Can't her enthusiasm and eagerness, can't her capacity that's growing so much for mindful living somehow sweep him up into that too, so that he goes on the journey too? And so that's kind of one of the pieces of thinking about this is, what does it mean to say we're not on the same journey, even with the person who is closest to us in the world? And of course, part of that is it's difficult for her, as it is for me, as it is for anyone, to be on the mindfulness journey and to say to another person, you should do it too, because there is judgment in that. And so what's the alternative? It's actually just sort of being who you are, doing what you're doing. But that can feel its own kind of uncertainty and unhappiness. And I have another client that I talk to about this quite a bit. She wants very much to have an attitude of non-judging awareness and compassion in her life, and particularly in her closest relationships. But what she notices is that a habit of mind of having a kind of transactional attitude towards relationships really takes over. What does that mean? It's a kind of, hey, I'll be nice to you if you'll be nice to me. I'll treat you with compassion if you treat me with compassion. And it's as though they're at the opposite ends of a rope and holding each other over a kind of a bridge and waiting for the other person to give. And they're both going to fall in the water, right? So, but that can be very difficult to get a hold of. You can have this aspiration of, I want to treat you with loving kindness. I want to bring an attitude of non-judging awareness to our interactions. But first, I'd appreciate it, right, if you would change. I would appreciate it if you would guarantee me that you will do the same for me. And that can be a real challenge in a relationship. And what's, you know, underneath that for that person, maybe it's about maintaining control. Maybe it's about maintaining the moral high ground, right? I'm going to be the non-judging awareness person, and that makes me so great, and I really want to hold on to that, and I want to use that almost as a way to judge you and to say, you're not doing it right. You're not doing your life right. You're not thinking about these things correctly. So in our closest relationships, we can have a difficult time seeing how even our best intentions around our own mindfulness journey can put us in a place where those habits of mind, our stories we tell ourselves, our perspective and failure to see another person's perspective, or that they are seeing the world from a different perspective, and our habits of judgment can make it difficult for us to simply be on our own journey and allow that in and of itself to be enough, right? We can recognize another's suffering. But that one of the things we want to recognize when that happens is that in and of itself, recognizing another person's suffering is probably a good thing. It's certainly better than being incapable of seeing it. But it still means we want to be really attentive to what's happening inside of us when that happens. Not because it's always all about us, but because we fall into those habits of failing to see perspective, of telling ourselves stories of judgment, if we aren't aware of what happens to us when we see another person's suffering. Because sometimes another person's suffering can bring up feelings of defensiveness for me, right? My partner's unhappy. Do I feel at fault? Am I somehow to blame, right? And when I get immediately to those questions, am I somehow to blame, right? It's very likely that a feeling of defensive, no, I'm not to blame. It's not my fault. Why is she, right? Even before maybe anything has really been said, if I see the suffering, I may immediately have that habit of going into a defensive place of saying, am I to the cause of this? It can seem to make us feel more very vulnerable, right? If I see that you're suffering, does that mean I can't be mad at you? Right? Am I somehow not allowed now to take care of my own feelings and emotions because I recognize that you're suffering? Can I no longer hold you accountable because I see that you are in a place of suffering? So I want to know what that habit of mind is that happens when I see someone else is suffering, and particularly a person who's close to me, because we often do feel responsible for our partner's feelings or our family's feelings. We often do mitigate our responses to somebody close to us if we think they're suffering. So we hold back maybe a feeling of wanting to hold the person accountable. And also there is, like my client, kind of a fear of unfairness, right? What if I see your suffering, but you don't see mine, right? Doesn't that put me in a pretty bad spot? Am I really, you know, what the hell? Why do I want to be on a mindfulness journey if other people are still kind of mean to me? But it's good to ask that kind of question. It's kind of a radical question to say, do I really want to do this if the only sense of benefit is my own inner peace? If it doesn't change the world around me, if it doesn't change the way other people interact with me. Now, I would offer that I think it inevitably will, of course, but it can sometimes it's not immediately apparent. And when I think about mindfulness in relationship to our closest relationships, I think about Jean-Paul Sartre, right? Of course, who wouldn't? And the famous phrase, hell is other people. And, you know, it comes from his play, No Exit. And the tendency, I think, in popular culture is to think that the reference is to say that hell is other people in the sense that other people are annoying, right? Other people get in our way. Other people are mean to us. And of course, that's not really what he means, even though all of those things happen. I think, and this is, I think, very tied to perspective and how we see ourselves in relationship to other people. It's the idea that helping other people is that simply the fact of their existence is the way in which other people are hell, because others can kind of fix their gaze on us and fix us in place, like a bug specimen on a piece of cardboard, right? Being pinned into one spot, that we can be just that one static thing that they see us as, and that can be extremely limiting to our sense of freedom. We can feel trapped by how other people see us, feel like we're in a straitjacket, feel that our opportunities and our possibilities as human beings, in the big sense of the sense of possibilities, are limited and restricted. And that's the way in which simply being with others is a kind of hell. And I think the relationship to mindfulness is that it's back to this question of who's going to go first. If I bring a mindful awareness to my interactions with others, is that in itself providing a little bit more liberation in their life? And do I liberate myself when I liberate my own gaze as I see other people? So we're going to take our last break, and when we come back, we're going to talk a little bit more about this way in which recognizing other people's suffering is also an opportunity for liberation for us, not being the source of that suffering. You're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio, and we'll be right back.
Tune into Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce every first and third Tuesday of the month at noon Pacific, 3 o'clock Eastern on Transformation Talk Radio. Join Susan and her guests as they share the stories that shift our souls about radical transformations, courageous breakthroughs, and life lessons. Three Things I've Learned with Susan Dolce. For more information, go to transformationtalkradio.com or visit Susan's website at susandolce.com.
Is traditional medicine not working for you? Do you still feel as if your health isn't 100%? Here at the Holistic Medical Center, Dr. Nushin Darvish and the qualified staff look through the dimensions of wellness and start a healing plan prioritized to your needs. Our physicians assess the whole you until complete health is achieved. Get the help you need by visiting drdarvish.com or call 425-451-0404.
Do you sometimes feel overwhelmed by your mind? Powerless when it seems to spin in worry circles or bombard you with self-critical thoughts? Do you want to learn how to master your mind and feel more in control of your life? Listen to Dr. Friedman's Empowerment Radio. Shift from confusion to clarity, self-doubt to confidence, and from anxiety to peace and balance. Dr. Friedman and his many guest experts share the insights and tools you want to live with greater ease, joy, and purpose. Tune in to Empowerment Radio every first and third Thursday at 9 a.m. Pacific Time.
Are you searching?
Are you searching?
Looking for a sign?
I'm looking for a sign.
A message you need to hear?
Is anybody out?
From the great unknown? From the most mysterious place that is the most familiar to your soul and the depths of who you are. The universe put someone here to talk to, someone God gave a blessing to that you may find insight with.
TheAngelLady.net.
1-800-323-1790.
1-800-323-1790.
Hello, friends. I am Terry J. Walker with the I Am Power Hour, and here is your soul-stretching success tip of the day. No matter where you go, there you are. Did you know our lives are like mirrors? You know, in the physical world, we stand in front of a mirror and see with our physical eyes a direct reflection of our physical self. Some of us use this physical mirror to critique our body, our hair, our blemishes. On the other hand, we also have a spiritual mirror that is a direct reflection of how we think, feel, and act in spirit, and it reflects what we experience and receive. You know, true beauty, love, wisdom, and acceptance comes from within. So the soul-stretching success question of the day is, which mirror are we using to create our life? I hope you have a wonderful day filled with love, light, and beauty. See you next time.
Oh. Hi, everyone. Welcome back to Nothing But Now. I'm Mary Angela McGuire, and you're listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. So today we're talking about being on a mindfulness journey in a world surrounded by people who are not on a mindfulness journey, if you can imagine, and what do we do with that? And the challenge, one of the challenges is, well, there maybe there are many. One, of course, is that it's simply a matter of becoming a student of our own mind and recognizing the stories that we tell ourselves about our relationships with other people and how they see us. The kind of radical acceptance of the idea that we don't see the world from the same perspective as anyone else, and that even a slight shift in perspective can change how someone makes sense of or interprets or feels about their world. And then that habit of judgment that even with our best of intentions, when we want to bring grace and compassion to our relationships with others, sometimes that can be veiled by that judgment, even the judgment that says, I love you, I think well of you, I want you to be happy, and first I need you to change in these four ways. So those are some of the things that can get in our way. And mindfulness, of course, is in some ways the challenge, right? We're on this journey. We'd love for other people to be on it with us, but that we are each on our own journey and that our desire for others to be on the same journey is kind of a fool's errand, of course, and is probably not a great expression of mindfulness. So how might we think about it instead if we really want to I think of that Gandhi quote that everybody uses about being the change you want to see in the world. If I want to live in a world where there's more mindfulness, really the most I can do is to be more mindful myself. It both is, I think, an example to others, I suppose, but more than that, I think it's really a shift in the energy. And there are two quotes, particularly from Tara Brach, that I want to share that I think help me think about this more effectively. And she writes, you know, as we free ourselves from the suffering of something is wrong with me, we trust and express the fullness of who we are. So we do have a tendency to believe in that habit of mind, that inner critic, that there's something wrong with me. And because of that belief, we tend to limit ourselves, right? And we don't trust and we don't express the fullness of who we are. And we, in a sense, and, you know, maybe Sartre's right, maybe he's not, about, is it that other people are hell or our perception of the other is hell? But that there are others, that we feel fixed in place, that there is something wrong with me, that we are limited, that we cannot be our full true selves, right? That's suffering, whether you think it comes from inside or from the constellation of your life community, right? So it is, but when we can free ourselves from that notion, from that constant drumbeat in our heads that something is wrong with me, then we become a person who is more free, who is liberated, and that changes the vibrational dynamic between us and other people. And she also writes, we need to befriend what is happening inside us before compassion for others can naturally arise. So we may have these great intentions about wanting to bring people along on our mindfulness journey, but it is noticing in that moment of wanting to create that for them, to shove it down their throats because it'll make them happy, that we want to turn inward and say, what's happening for me in this moment? Can I befriend that anxiety I feel, the defensiveness I feel, the vulnerability I feel in this moment about our relationship, that I can befriend those fears and thoughts and relax? And in doing that, I am going to be more compassionate towards those around me. And not holding the whole situation hostage, right? But being able to and willing to see others' divine spark, and not waiting for ours to be recognized first. That's the ideal. So I also want to say a practice that I have found really helpful and that I've mentioned before is the metta meditation. And Ruth King, in her book, Thinking Mindful of Race, does a really wonderful job of a very elaborated explanation of metta meditation. But it is choosing a couple of phrases that really are good and positive, and I tend to use really simple ones. May you be well, may you know peace. And the metta meditation is to start with yourself and to offer peace and wellness, or whatever phrases you happen to choose, to yourself. The quickest version is to offer it to those with whom you are have difficulties, and then to offer it to all beings. A more elaborated practice is to offer it to the self, to offer it in that next concentric circle out of those closest to us, to offer it to those that whose paths we cross every day, but we may not know. So to others who are somewhat indifferent to us, but not in a negative way, to offer it to those who are a challenging presence in our life, and then to offer it to all beings. I use it as part of my daily meditation practice to go through that usually three times. And you start with the self, because what does Jack Kornfield say? Compassion that does not include the self is incomplete. So start with the self, Mary Angela. May you know peace. May you be well. And go through that several times. I think about, to call them kind of my loving circle, my most immediate, closest people to me, to people that I have passing relationships with, to people I have difficulty with, and then to all beings. So that's a practice that I really recommend in terms of helping you to feel more at ease with your relationships with others. And to feel, if you need to feel like you're doing something, you're doing something. This is a way of doing something, and it does change the dynamic of your relationship with others. And that kind of meditation, I find, is also then part of my reservoir in when I'm actually dealing with others, when I'm not alone in a room meditating, right? But when I'm actually in the thick of it with another person, that peace that I can bring to the world is right there present, and I don't have to be so reactive. So if you'd like to learn more about my work as a life coach, these are the kind of issues I talk to clients about all the time. You can visit my website, which is mcguirelifecoach.com. We'll have a conversation. That's the first one is free, and you'll tell me what you want to get out of coaching. I'll talk to you about my methods or approaches to coaching, and then we'll have a session right there so that I want you to be able to make an informed choice of, is this kind of coaching what's going to help me think about my life differently? I'm an excellent listener, if I do say so myself, and I ask good questions, and it's really an opportunity for you to, you know, there's a venting, but there's also a then what, and an inquiry process about what do I notice about myself, my habits of mind, that many of which I may be willing now to let go of because they no longer serve me well. And I hope you'll join me on the show next week on Thursday. I have a wonderful guest. His name is Daniel Pinot. Daniel is a doctoral candidate at the University of Mississippi in clinical psychology. So he has a wealth of experience as a clinician now, as well as a research agenda. And the particular topic he's interested in is kind of twofold. One of it is about disseminating mental health information. And he particularly looks at practices like mindfulness and how they work particularly well with people in that college, traditional college age people, kind of that 18 to 22. So if you're in that camp or you know someone who is, this is a great opportunity to learn more about mindfulness, mental health education. Of course, if you want to listen and you're not in that age group, it's not an opportunity to then take his ideas and his references and go shove them down somebody's throat, right? But it is an opportunity for you to learn more about it, and maybe in a kind of invitation to someone else to say, I heard this interesting thing today. Maybe you'd like, I think you might be interested, and leave it at that. And then next Tuesday, maybe you'll join me also on Tuesday, December 15th. I'm going to guest host on Dr. Pat's show, and that's going to be at 10 a.m. Pacific time, 1 p.m. Eastern. And I'm going to make the case against mindfulness. What? Yeah. So I was a debater in college, and what I learned is it's really important to understand anything that I want to take in to my own being from as many perspectives as possible. And there are those who make interesting, worthwhile, worth examining arguments about the limitations of mindfulness. So that's what I'm going to talk about next Tuesday, December 15th, when I guest host for Dr. Pat's show. So until next week, I hope that you will be curious about your mind. I hope you'll be kind to yourself. And I really want to thank you for listening to Nothing But Now on Transformation Talk Radio. Have a great week. You've been listening to Nothing But Now, Mindful Living with Dr. Mary Angela McGuire on Transformation Talk Radio. Join me next time as we continue to practice mindfulness and challenge ourselves to change. If you'd like to find out more about my work or contact me, please go to my website, McGuireLifeCoach.com. That's McGuireLifeCoach.com. See you next time.
The music for Nothing But Now was created by Salt Theory.